as I've been being paid, the money I'm earning is appreciating rapidly. Over 2 years, I've earned like 2 to 3 times more than I was actually paid. From the perspective of an employer, it's almost like being able to give everybody a free raise. If you're paying people in money that appreciates instead of depreciates, this is a pretty significant innovation for thinking about a company's ability to get the most they can out of their compensation and rewards budget. Crazy as it sounds, the answer is to use a different form of money.
Welcome to the Bitcoin Playbook, where we discuss proven strategies for using Bitcoin in your business. I'm your host, Josh Friedman, and our guest today is Scott Deedles, who's the CEO of Block Rewards. Block Rewards provides employee benefits and salaries in Bitcoin. We talk about that today, as well as some of the developments that have happened in his startup across the last 18 months. We're going to get to our interview with Scott right after this. Business owners, unlock the benefits Bitcoin has to offer your business with the Bitcoin for Business Quick Start Guide. This 27-page guide highlights the 6 ways you can grow your business with Bitcoin. Check it out in the show notes. Scott, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me back. Pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. So I like to start off every single interview with a few questions that help us to get to know you a little bit better and give us some insight for our own lives. So you ready for these?
Hit me up.
As a repeat guest, I change up the first question. And the question is, what's the part of the Bitcoin rabbit hole you've been going down most recently?
This one might be a little bit further out there. I've been interested in the discussion around quantum computing and the gaming out of potential solutions, the discussion around what it might mean for Bitcoin's, prolonged security, and this concept of, there's been a discussion about sort of re-releasing lost coins when wallets that aren't were the majority of wallets to need to upgrade to quantum signatures, that would sort of recirculate or reintroduce wallets that aren't able to migrate. And that discussion to me has been really, I don't know if I have a definitive opinion on it, but it's something I'm following. I think it's cool. I think it's a window into there's a tendency in Bitcoin for people to want to think about things in like the super short term, what's Bitcoin's price movement done over the last 24 hours? What's it doing over the last 90 days? Has there been a bull run yet? Are bull runs over? Is this going to, has it failed as a medium of exchange? All these different things. And I think it's like, at the same time, there's a big opportunity to zoom out and think about how many people are trying to imagine Bitcoin as a very long-term and enduring technology. And it's something that will probably continuously evolve for the rest of our lifetimes. And, in the same way that internet technology has done so, right? Internet technology is vastly different than it was 15 years ago and like incomprehensibly different than it was 15 years before that. When I got the internet in my home in the early 90s, like it literally took 1 hour to download a single photo. And to do that, you had to tie up your home phone. Yep. I don't remember this, but I think at that time, if people were thinking about it the same way some people are thinking about Bitcoin now, they would have been thinking like, the internet's failed. The internet will never be a global network for information exchange. And here we are. Things are very different. So yeah, I think the discussion around quantum is interesting, and potential recirculation of lost coins. Very fascinating idea.
So question number two is this. What's an insight or fact about Bitcoin that you wish everyone understood?
What is an insight or fact? I think that for me, something I try to talk to people a lot about Bitcoin is, as they're trying to understand Bitcoin, say, versus crypto, is decentralization, sort of the notion of decentralization really sort of being a binary thing rather than, I think in the crypto world, decentralization is often painted more as a spectrum. And there are levels of decentralization, which I suppose is true, but I think if we are considering a monetary network, a something to be uncensorable, something to be totally permissionless, something to have a set of rules that all the participants sort of agree on. That's what decentralized means. And I think that that is the most important thing to really understand why Bitcoin is different from every other digital currency, digital asset, however you want to categorize these things. If you want to lump Bitcoin together with them, it's the fine print on what constitutes decentralization, what preserves decentralization, and why it's important.
Question number three, what's the Bitcoin resource you most recommend to other people?
It depends on the person. So for those who are potentially, you know, inclined, have a background in like economics or the history of money, safes, Bitcoin Standard, I think really is kind of the manual for, but at the same time, I've given that book to people and had it flop because it can be a little bit too much, too dense. So typically what I do with people is try to feel them up a little bit. And, it's a two-part choice between the Bitcoin Standard and The Price of Tomorrow. I just think they're both really excellent introductions, and people will start this trip, in a different way. And, yeah.
Question number four, beyond Bitcoin, what's a resource, tool, or idea that's been helpful to you or your work at Block Rewards recently?
Good question. A resource or tool? I'm gonna maybe date myself a little bit. I am a massive fan of Stephen Covey and one of his books, The Speed of Trust. And so this is a tool that I have used at lots of different companies throughout my career and career in leadership. And we're using Speed of Trust right now. Speed of Trust is, I think, an incredible manual for building connective and high productive teams, which is like, you know, there's Block Rewards, the business, and then there's Block Rewards, the people that make the business. One of the things we spend a lot of time thinking about our corporate culture, our leadership group, and how we make decisions. And yeah, we're all taking a look at Speed of Trust right now.
So could you distill Speed of Trust down to like a specific idea or maybe a set of ideas that make it a little bit more understandable to someone or you know, to whet people's appetites if it sounds interesting to them?
Yeah. So the core idea in Speed of Trust is that trust is sort of the most important lubricant for productivity. And so when people act in high trust relationships are empowered by trust, you are removing barriers and creating sort of frictionless movement for productivity and creativity, like basically all of the things that you would want to have happen in a high performance team. If you can sort of the thesis is that if you step back, the multiplier, the thing that enables all of these things to really flourish in any team is trust. And so Speed of Trust is a manual for identifying sort of where things could be improved, some tools to implement how to improve them, and really like bring everyone into an agreement that it is like trust is this sort of like critical ingredient that, you know, you can have a successful business without it, but it's just way easier if you don't have to do that.
Absolutely. Now we have our final, what we call our arbitrary but insightful question. And it's this: as a general life principle, is it better to ask why or why not?
I typically stay away from why questions. And this actually comes from my background in sales performance and sales trainings. Why questions I find have an accusatory nature, and they tend to put people on their heels a little bit. I would, if I had to pick one or the other, I would say why not. But I try to actually sort of avoid using the word why at all, and I would probably try to reimagine that as a how question, if I could.
If you were hit by a bus right now, could your family access your Bitcoin? When's the right time to stop hodling and use Bitcoin to impact your family's lives, not just yours? What if Bitcoin doesn't reach the value you expect, or it takes longer to reach that value? Do you have a plan? Do you have the proper trust structure to avoid probate, maintain your privacy, and minimize taxes? Do you want to avoid taxes to stack more sats or leverage your stack without selling? Should you add Bitcoin to your business's balance sheet? Are you truly confident in your self-custody setup? If any of those questions made you stop and think, you probably realize that simply buying and holding Bitcoin is not a complete financial plan. That's where Strong Wealth comes in. Orange-pilled advisors blending traditional financial planning with deep Bitcoin expertise, giving you the best of both worlds, so you can sleep peacefully knowing you're making the right moves for your family no matter what happens. Schedule a free call at strongwealth.net. That's strongwealth.net. Strong Wealth. Wealth management for Bitcoiners by Bitcoiners. Today's episode of Business Bitcoinization is proudly brought to you by Velus Commerce, where the future of business technology meets Bitcoin. As we journey through the era of Bitcoin and its transformational impact on businesses, there's one name that stands out: Velus Commerce. Whether you're looking to build a cutting-edge website, a seamless mobile app, or custom software, Velus is your go-to team. They've been diving deep into the world of Bitcoin since 2014, making them one of the most experienced groups for integrating Bitcoin and Lightning payments into a variety of digital platforms. But here's what truly sets them apart. Velus Commerce doesn't just build. They bring a wealth of knowledge to ensure your project's success from day one. Their team understands the nuances of Bitcoin, ensuring that your business stays ahead of the curve. And for all business Bitcoinization listeners out there, Velus Commerce is offering a free consultation to kickstart your project the right way. So if you're ready to future-proof your business in the coming age of hyper-Bitcoinization, head over to veluscommerce.com or reach out on Twitter at veluscommerce. Make sure your business thrives in the Bitcoin era. Well, Scott, we're here today to talk about block rewards. I was looking back, it's been over 18 months since our initial interview, so I'm sure there's been a lot of development. For people who did not hear our first conversation or have not heard about block rewards in the past, could you briefly give an overview of who you guys are and what you do?
Yeah. And I was tempted to go back and listen to that first episode because we did a lot has happened since then. Block Rewards, we are a Canadian startup aspiring to be the world's best tool for paying staff in Bitcoin. It's Bitcoin only, which is a differentiator for us in the space. Paying people in Bitcoin is not a new idea, and there are lots of companies doing a great job of it. They have been doing this, you know, this has been something that's been available for kind of more than 10 years. But in the Bitcoin only space, that number is quite a bit smaller. We view Bitcoin itself as the apex incentive, as the most important financial tool that an employer can offer their staff. I think that Bitcoin is a technology with the ability to fundamentally reimagine the employer-employee relationship because of the, you know, this is like a speed of trust idea. There is a friction that happens between an employee and an employer as the result of nobody's fault, but it's because of the leaky monetary system that we're all forced to use depending on where we live. And this creates sort of unsolvable problems on both the part of the employee and the employer. And so Bitcoin is this thing that I think can really, really dramatically change the workplace. Back to block rewards. So we are an all-in Bitcoin compensation rewards company interfacing with different HRIS and payroll tools to make paying people in Bitcoin simple, accessible, trustworthy, and hopefully as mainstream as possible.
Yeah. So I'm curious to know who the clientele are for this. Are these Bitcoiners who own businesses who then want to give their employees Bitcoin exposure? Or have you had to go out and educate the market and explain to people who maybe aren't Bitcoiners why this would be a good idea for their business?
Great question. We're in Canada only right now. I would say if you were looking at a 50,000 foot view of the companies that use us today, it's predominantly blue collar. We see, and you know, and we see the vast majority where an owner or a key executive is a Bitcoiner. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, that makes sense to me. We're still so early that companies getting behind Bitcoin requires a lot of understanding of why you would want to do that, of how safe it is to do this. You know, there's so a lot of those hurdles have been overcome where we are dealing with somebody who truly kind of understands Bitcoin, who owns Bitcoin. Companies that are have decided to allocate some of their own sort of corporate treasury to Bitcoin as a natural progression to offering some Bitcoin to their staff. So those would be kind of like the big trends. There's also lots of interest on the tech side, younger staff. I think that it's something that we do also find, even with companies that talk to us and decide not to move forward, that their staff are more interested than they would have expected. We do surveys with prospective clients to help them out gauge the interest. And yeah, people, I think, to have a general appetite for financial tools that aren't sort of like legacy or how their parents saved. You know, it's the times have just changed.
And I forget how soon after you guys launched that I interviewed you, but that was September 23, I think, or at least that's when the episode was released.
Yeah.
I think that was the bottom of the bear market. I'm guessing that anyone who joined up has seen some amazing returns. It seems like if people joined early enough, even if they were skeptical at this point in time, even though we're kind of at this choppy point of the price action, that it's not really, it's just ranging, you know, between 70 and 90. It seems like if people saw the growth in the last couple of years, they'd be true believers by now, so to speak. Have you found this to be the case?
Yes. And it's just something that I think is going to continue on and on and on and on until everyone's a believer. So we are definitely in this for the long game. I see this as being something that becomes kind of normal over the next, I don't know, if it's 3, 5, 10 years. And I can see that it could start as small parts of people's wages, the same way people's personal Bitcoin allocation as part of their portfolio tends to be sort of a representation of how comfortable they are with Bitcoin, right? So most people start with $100 or whatever they're comfortable with, because they're concerned that it could completely vanish. And as that fear sort of alleviates over time, your conviction grows, you start wanting to spend more. And then the more you understand it, the more it makes sense to take more and more. So we have some, you know, and we are customers of Block Rewards too at Block Rewards. So, you know, some of us take 100% of our wage in Bitcoin, and I'm one of those people. So, yeah.
Well, I think that's really interesting. I'm not yet quite there, but when I can, I frequently get paid in Bitcoin, and I want to get to the point where that's just I spend from my Bitcoin. I feel like you have to have a certain amount, a large enough stack. And for everyone that, you know, it's a different size stack for people to feel comfortable just living off of Bitcoin. What's your experience been as you've received your salary in Bitcoin? And I'm assuming are living off of Bitcoin or close to it. What's that experience like? Has it been, you know, harrowing at times, or does it feel pretty comfortable where you are?
Yeah, I mean, the nice part is if you're earning, you're continually replacing. So I think that, you know, there's tiny amounts of slippage. I'm like anybody, so my payday tends to coincide with, you know, when I pay my bills. And so, you know, you may have the Bitcoin price does move, but it doesn't often move so much that it would dramatically impede your ability to live sort of intra-month would be my personal lived experience. And I mean, during the time that Block Rewards has been in existence, I've been that same beneficiary. So as I've been being paid, the money I'm earning is appreciating rapidly and over longer periods. And we're not even talking about like decades, right? over 2 years, I've earned like almost, well, I don't know, I'd have to do the math, but like 2 to 3 times more than I was actually paid. Which, so if you think about that from the perspective of an employer, it's almost like being able to give everybody a free raise. If you're paying people in money that appreciates instead of depreciates, this is a pretty significant innovation for thinking about a company's ability to get the most they can out of their compensation and rewards budget. You know, it's as crazy as it sounds. The answer is to use a different form of money.
So one of the values of providing Bitcoin, either compensation or bonuses, whatever it might be, we've talked about this in the past, but it helps you to appear as if you're forward-looking, and you probably are if you're offering something like this. That said, one thing I've noticed is your branding is kind of a little retro, you know, 70s style. You go to the website, a lot of the pictures. What is the thinking there? Is it to kind of like step back from the tech forward and focus on something that people feel more comfortable with? I'd love to understand a little bit more about the rebranding you guys have gone through since 18 months ago.
Yeah, thanks for asking that. In my mind, so I was born in 1980, and I'm the youngest of three children. My older siblings were, you know, firmly kids of the 70s. We grew up watching Star Wars and, you know, riding bicycles. And when I think about how life used to be different, now looking backwards from the lens of having understood Bitcoin, my opinion is that money working well is something that provides people certainty about the future. And when money performs the way it's supposed to, which it was doing more effectively during the time, you know, that reflects our branding, life is a lot simpler. You know, when money works well, you don't have to spend your evenings and weekends day trading stocks or running an Airbnb. You know, in the 70s or 80s, like The Simpsons is a story about a person who works at a plant who doesn't have a college education and has a 4-bedroom house and 2 cars on a single income. And that's what it was like. That's what life was like when money worked better. And so when we think about what that means is we just had they were simpler days. And so I think that when we have nostalgia, I mean, for me at least, it's a hearkening back to the way to, for us to potentially experience some form of that now is to exit out of the sort of unsolvable challenges presented to us by the current financial landscape that we all live in, and to do that using a tool that enables us to regain that sense of certainty about the future so that we can go out and ride a bike and, you know, spend our free time enjoying it. You know, it's like the most finite thing that any of us have is time. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, I think that sort of socially we've seen a trend accelerate over the last 5, 10, 15 years where people increasingly are willing to spend less and less of their time on basically anything. So mm-hmm. we used to watch 1-hour TV shows and we had to watch the commercials too. Like it was an hour.
Yep.
And then we started fast forwarding through commercials. We would record it. Then we started streaming, and you know, you would watch a show only as long as it interested you. Instagram Reels, down to TikTok, and like the statistics on TikTok are like, if you don't catch someone's attention within like 2 or 3 seconds, they're swiping to the next thing. Mm-hmm. So you know, we're all sort of like experiencing a compression of our attention spans in different ways. And I think that part of the psychology behind this has to do with the inability of us to effectively store our time in savings. You know, we spend our time trying to earn money so that we can turn that time into things that we can do with our free time. So, that's kind of what it's all about, is we want people to associate Bitcoin with a simpler life, with the good old days. It's a solution to a pressing financial problem that affects almost everyone, and affects people disproportionately. You know, people with fewer assets are harder hit by this, by the ravages of inflation. So that's the thinking.
I love it. I appreciate that. And as you're talking, I'm thinking, how can you condense this down into a short little bite? I mean, it's crazy. You're talking about how people don't have attention spans anymore because of their relationship with time. But, you know, you need to get this message out to people. But it's almost hard to just, you know, give a 30-second explanation for how broken money has influenced how we view time and how we live our lives and, you know, how it shapes society. It's so complex. And I feel like a lot of people don't really take the time to try to understand it. But that's the type of message that more and more people need to understand. I think they will understand it, maybe not quite in those terms, but eventually everyone kind of comes around to Bitcoin. But if someone could hear what you had to say and understand that today, then we'd all move toward Bitcoin a lot more quickly.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, and so we've got some really fun images, and, you know, like we're trying to meet people where they are. So if you have 10 seconds or 1 second to stare at something, and that might be a thought provoking for someone in a way that gets them to start thinking about Bitcoin, then we've done our job.
So I'd love to hear a little bit more about, you know, once again, over the last 18 months or so, what are some other things that you've maybe things that you've changed, new offerings or just learnings from a Bitcoin startup? You're doing something that, like you said, other people are doing this, but very few Bitcoin only approaches. And I think it'd be interesting for people listening to this podcast to kind of get some of those, to glean some of those learnings from someone like yourself.
Sure. Specifically within the business, I can share. So our customers are employers and, preferably larger employers. So The biggest learning for us, at the outset of Block Rewards, the products that we offer, basically like every other product in the space, are non-custodial. And so what that means is for employees to participate in a Block Rewards savings plan, they would need to have their own Bitcoin wallet, which if you're into Bitcoin, isn't that big a deal. But our mission is to sort of bring Bitcoin to the masses by engaging with employers and letting the game theory, you know, like I also, maybe I didn't mention this earlier, but I see that Bitcoin is an obvious tool for companies to compete with each other. And, you know, as companies understand this quickly, so certain companies that adopt this early will have an advantage compared to others by offering something of incredible value to their staff. So our product has been non-custodial, entering into Bitcoin custody arrangements can have two problems. One is the perception. Bitcoin is meant to be self-custodied. And, you know, this is something like, this is a core part of being your own bank. And we have had to consider how to do that while building a product that could be rolled out to a company that had 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 staff. And so the logistics of that is something that has been very tricky. So what we found early on is product works great for small employers, 10, 30, 50 employees. You can get everybody in a room. You can explain to everybody how to get a wallet, no problem. But if we all of a sudden have a sort of an enterprise, a corporate company, they want to think about this, that's not going to work. So we've engaged over the past, you know, since you and I talked last, we went on a big hunt to first find a custody partner for Canada, which we have since done. And We are just now in the process of converting our existing clients to a custodial product. Custodial first. We built instead now simple ways for people to withdraw their Bitcoin in self-custody. But the default setting is that any employee that wants to participate is issued a wallet through a qualified custodian that we work with. And this is kind of now our strategy and our scaling strategy as we move into other jurisdictions to work with different qualified custodians, but you know, locally by country, so that we can offer this product all over the world and do it in a way that is inclusive. Because you know, sort of as I know, I think that getting people over the hurdle of some of the things that might scare them about initially participating in Bitcoin and onboarding some of these things all at once can be a lot for people. So we feel that with figuring out the custody piece, we've removed a big psychological obstacle for a lot of hopefully pre-coiners or pre-Bitcoiners. And this is something that I think is going to make us a more feasible option for employers of scale. Like, we're really excited about the day where we get a marquee sort of national brand decide to start offering their employees Bitcoin and doing it with us. Mm.
So a lot of people listening to this who are not Canadian will likely be asking themselves, why is Block Rewards not in my country? Obviously, many listeners will be in the United States, but listeners from other countries as well. Would you have a response for them? Is there ever a possibility that Block Rewards spreads out to other countries?
Oh, 100%. Actually, it's been good. Canada, in some ways, is a very Bitcoin forward. You know, like Canadians had access to Bitcoin ETFs years before there were American products. And in some ways, the Canadian financial market is a little bit of a testing ground for things that are then implemented in the US. The regulatory framework is very different, and so we've learned a lot building the product in Canada, but absolutely, we are working now on our US entry, and I would say we're targeting sometime this summer. So we've got some very exciting partners that we are engaged with right now, and I feel like when we make these announcements, there'll be some heads turned. So yeah, if everything goes well, you're listening in the US, sometime later this year, this should be available in all 50 states. And depending on how the year goes, we could be in other continents later this year as well.
That's exciting. I guess there are a lot of directions we could probably take this in, but it's probably a good time to close the interview for today. Maybe we can bring you back in the summer or in the fall to kind of get those updates if you have them then. Do you have any final thoughts before we finish up that we maybe didn't get to cover or something you'd like to reiterate to the listeners? And then if you would also share where people can go to find out more about you and Block Rewards.
For sure. Yeah. No, I would love to come back. You know, we could spend some time actually talking about the product and how it works. But for today, if anyone's listening and they want to learn more, I would say you can find us at blockrewards.ca or on LinkedIn. And if you're interested to stay abreast of our progress in entering the US, give us a follow on LinkedIn. We are posting regular updates, and as our website transitions to a more international domain over the coming months, we're going to also be launching a wait list for US companies so that you can be notified the second we're ready to start onboarding US customers.
Excellent. Well, Scott, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Josh.
Well, friends, it's a wrap. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Bitcoin Playbook. If you want to reach out to either me or Scott, you can find those links down in the show notes. If you're in Canada, you already know what to do. If you're not, be sure to follow along with Block Rewards so you know as soon as they're live in your country. As always, keep building, keep growing, and until next time, keep living and leading.